Hello and welcome into the KE Report. We're kicking off starting with Ed Moya, Senior Market Analyst at Oanda, and we're glad to have Ed on just to get some general market thoughts. Ed, I guess just coming out of the gates, one of the observations we made off mic is we've seen the 10-year and the 30-year Treasury rates come down even further. So there tends to be a bid for the bonds in the marketplace, and the rates are coming down to lower and lower levels. What do you make of that action? Is it traders that are just taking some profits out of the general markets after a really good run and storing them in bonds? Or do you think there's a little bit of hesitation under the market surface where people are rotating into a more of a safe haven aspect with bonds?
I think it's a combination of factors, but there definitely is some interest abroad. You're seeing German, Japanese investors. They are going to treasuries. And I think when you take a look at some of the zero or negative interest rates that you're getting abroad, there is still tremendous value with U.S. treasuries. And I think right now for many traders, right, there's this concern that there is just too much of a consensus that, this market is poised to just relentlessly go higher. You know, the Goldilocks trade has been great over these last several months. I think that no one doubted that we were going to see strong growth as the economy bounced back from COVID. And transitory inflation and yields, that's kind of been the theme. I think what we're waiting for is, well, when will this get tested? And the bond market tried to do its work earlier in the year, but now it seems that you've had capitulation, and now we're just seeing this lower interest rate environment kind of be the thesis for many traders. And I think right now the risks are that over the short term, because of the way the market's positioned, I think that will we finish the year much higher from where we are? I think there's a strong likelihood that could be the case, but I think there is this growing risk that we could have a pullback. Well, we did see a pullback with the NASDAQ and the Russell 2000, but I think there is this concern that we could also see a pretty decent sized pullback just because of the way the market is positioned here. And there's a lot of big factors that are going to be, I think, driving how people respond and how quickly they might head to the sidelines, and some of that is this taper debate is going to intensify over the coming months. It seems like Jackson Hole is off the table. September seems less likely for a lot of people, and I think the consensus is that this taper announcement might get really formalized by the end of the year, November, December. But I think the risks are still there that we could have it in September. And I think these inflationary pressures across all of this earnings season, that's all we've been hearing. It's all about inflation. These pricing pressures, they're getting passed on to the U.S. consumer. And I think that eventually you're going to really see that to, impact people's thinking. And right now, I think there is a risk that we could see some sticky inflation, which I think we'll get another boost here when we have oil prices kind of resume their upward trend. And that market is heavily in deficit. And I think we're approaching that key moment where these Iran nuclear talks are going to pick up again. The inauguration day for Ibrahim Raisi is on Thursday. And there's no surprise that we'll be getting some hardline comments. And if talks head in the wrong direction, that oil market is really going to get a lot tighter. And the economy will have a bigger shock on surging oil prices. And I think that could be one key risk that we could see develop over the next couple weeks. But right now, it seems that this market, it's just everyone's too bullish. And I think once you get that type of positioning, tend to get a little bit of cautiousness in my approach.
Yeah, there still does seem to be a bullish undercurrent overall. And you would think that with energy prices rising, as you mentioned, that would feed into the inflation. But when oil's up at $70 prices and there's still some of those potential supply demand shocks that could hit the system from Iran and from OPEC, you wonder why we aren't seeing a little bit more run in the rates, because you would think that the rates would be running higher with inflation, yet they're still running lower. So do you think this is due to Fed policy, or do you think this is due to people assuming that that correction is on the surface, maybe in September, as you mentioned?
When it comes to what the Fed has done, and I think you have to tip your hat to them. The amount of what they, how much of the treasury market they control, it is becoming very significant. And I think that you're probably, you're only going to see the yield curve really accelerate higher, steepen, once tapering is actually being done. You know, the Fed should have probably started tapering earlier this year, probably around March or so. They have. And now they're locked into this stance. And, you know, they're outcome-based. They're not going to be changing stance anytime soon, which means they'll likely be late. If, let's say, a lot of this inflation is sticky, persistent, because they're outcome-based, they're going to be things will get ugly very quickly. But right now, I think the argument that this is transitory, it still holds. I mean, the chip shortage, that's likely to get rectified in the next few months. There's a strong optimism that that could be the case. I think that we're seeing, you know, this Delta variant, the way it's spreading across the country, specifically the unvaccinated states, it's not really slowing economic activity that much. And I think what you're probably going to see is that this economy is, you know, was bracing for a fall wave. And it looks like we kind of got that a little bit earlier. Now, obviously, this virus can mutate, and you're probably going to have the at-risk and elder population that got vaccinated earlier in the year get another booster. But I think we're getting closer to having COVID in the rearview mirror. That's not the story for globally. And I think the global outlook is what's struggling. And that's because of, you know, their slow vaccine rollouts. And you're probably going to see that drag on global economic growth kind of hamper some of the optimism we were having here. So I think that the inability for Treasury yields to really, you know, get going, partially due to the Fed, global growth concerns are still key. Like yesterday, Australia, I mean, you're having more lockdowns. You're going to have like large parts of their country that are still going to be in lockdown in August. Until this wave passes, you're probably going to see that's going to have every central bank have a cautious stance. And if no one is really, you know, helping send yields higher, I think, you know, the Treasury market will remain pretty much in demand. So it just seems that Treasuries are still where it's at.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of this is, as you point out, some of the other world economies have not opened up as quick as the U.S., and they've remained under pressure with some of the COVID lockdowns, but also just getting businesses up and running and getting folks out and circulating in the economy. Do you think that's what's possibly putting an underlying bid in the U.S. Treasuries, is foreign investors that are skeptical of their own markets but look to the U.S. strength and think, hey, I can at least park some money in the U.S. markets and in the U.S. bonds, and they're treating the U.S. markets as their safe haven? Could that be what's happening, Ed?
Well, yeah, and I think that is a good portion of some of those foreign flows that we're seeing to treasuries. But I think because the rest of the world, specifically developing nations, they can't get rid of COVID right now. And the problem is they don't have the vaccination. They're really struggling in achieving that. And I think what's really kind of hurt their outlook, if you take a look at India, for instance, the Delta variant really kind of took off with it, impacting their economy, and it took about 4 to 6 weeks for them to really get behind that, and then they started to see cases trend lower. Well, what's really impacting the outlook is that now you have a lot of scientists, and there's some models that are predicting that you're going to have another wave in India, where they're going to probably see cases grow to over 150,000 a day in just a couple months. So I think that because these countries, they're still nowhere, they're not a month or two, it's much longer before they have vaccinations where they need them to be to really get this virus under control. There's that never-ending risk of new waves that are going to hit their economies. And until the rest of the world can have COVID under control, you know, their growth outlook is really going to struggle. Their debt burden is going to grow. And for a lot of these emerging markets, that's going to be risking for some of them sovereign credit ratings. And I think that if you're in that country, you're probably not going to feel too bad about owning treasuries. So that's really, I think, been the key driver. And until we really, I think, have some confidence that, you know, that COVID is not going to be the primary catalyst for the market, you know, we're going to be in that environment for some time.
Well, just shifting it back over to the U.S. markets briefly, Ed, you had mentioned off mic that you were looking at what it was going to look like life after Powell at the Fed. And we also discussed some of the wage pressures that are going to be in the market. And the Fed is concerned about the general health of the markets and market liquidity, but they're also concerned about wage growth and having the economy be at full employment. So how do you think that's going to play into the direction the Fed goes for this life after Powell setup that's coming?
Well, I think right now, you know, we have that goal for the Fed's outlined. They need substantial progress. We're having progress in the labor market recovery, but substantial. And for some, you know, Brainerd, you need another 7 to 8 million jobs to be filled. And yes, if you look at the JOLTS data, it looks like, hey, this shouldn't be that hard. But that's not how things work. So I think you're nowhere near seeing the type of labor hiring that is needed to check off that substantial progress box. I think what that is doing is it's really solidifying that lower interest rate environment for longer. And I think right now you have Powell locked in. He's, first of all, I think in the next couple of months, we should definitely know whether or not his term will end in February, or if Biden keeps him, that would, I think the market has priced that in. But if Biden does look to shake things up, everyone is leaning towards Lael Brainerd as a potential nominee. And I think right now, if that were to be the case, she's not a hawkish member whatsoever, but I think it would move the needle. It would provide an opportunity for the Fed to reset their thinking. I think what you would probably see to, you know, tackle financial regulatory concerns a little quicker. She'd be much more embracing of digital currency for the Fed. So I think, you know, that would have significant market impact implications. But right now, I think that, you know, we're stuck in this big wait and see approach for the labor market recovery. And right now, all eyes are, you know, pointing to this non-farm payroll report. And we haven't seen a strong pickup really that has outpaced consensus estimates. And I think, like, unless we start to get a couple million months of hiring numbers, I think you're probably going to see that substantial progress goal is going to be elusive. So I think you know, the market is really fixated on the labor component right now. Inflation, it's got a backseat. And so if we see better hiring numbers, I think then that will get the taper trade going, and that will, you know, be what's needed to, you know, get the 10-year treasury yield above 120, which right now is at 116.
Yeah, all eyes will be on the labor markets. And for right now, at least the inflation story is simmering down a little bit. You did bring up one thing in that comment that I may want to touch on, though, and that was the potential interest in the Fed in digital currencies. You know, we've heard a lot about how central banks may embrace digital currencies, but we've also seen quite a interesting about face in the crypto market just over the last few weeks, where Bitcoin and the cryptos were generally in a downtrend. Of course, there was some news with Amazon and, you know, what they would be doing with payments in Bitcoin. And there was some news from Elon Musk where he had said that Tesla would start accepting Bitcoin as a payment method again, that he may start buying it. That's tended to send the markets rallying. But we also see this weakened volatility. And we were talking off mic, Ed, that sometimes, even though cryptos are traded 24/7, most of the market participants are still using their platforms during mostly normal trading sessions, but we see this big volatility over the weekends, and you had the concept that maybe that was the institutional money pushing things around. Would you like to expand on that a little bit, on the crypto markets, Bitcoin, and the action we've seen lately?
Well, a lot of the high-frequency trading systems, these active money managers, what they'll do is they'll look to identify certain reactions to the market, and right now what we've seen is because of the way Bitcoin, you know, pricing has evolved this year, a lot of traders right now, and some will use brokerages where they have leverage. What they'll do is they'll try to have trading strategies that capture some of the range-bound behaviors that we've seen Bitcoin elicit. And right now, when Bitcoin is really starting to turn bullish, I think a lot of these institutional investors, what they can do is take advantage of pumping up the price over the weekend. And then what happens is, because a lot of the market can't participate, take advantage of some of the weekend volatility, which for the most part has been thin. They're able to secure some easy trades. And the problem is, you know, eventually this type of trading behavior really, it wreaks havoc on a lot of brokers, because then you have opening gaps on Sunday. Bitcoin's 24/7, but for the people that are actually buying the actual Bitcoin, you know, you can get in and out whenever you want. So I think there's that concern that you have this institutional world that is still embracing Bitcoin. I think last week you highlighted a lot of the key stories, Musk and Amazon. And I think for me, one of the biggest drivers for Bitcoin was that Fidelity survey. And it outlined that there is still so much potential interest here for this market space. And I think the key takeaway was that, I think over 90% of the people surveyed were interested in digital assets and expected to have holdings by, 2026. The untapped, potential from these institutional investors is really key. As you see people, look to time their entrance into Bitcoin, taking advantage of some of that illiquid, weekend volatility, because, we really saw prices go from 40 to 42,000 and then kind of back down below 40,000. But that was a pretty one-way move. It was easy, and there was so many ample opportunity to cash in as the market waited to open on Sunday night for many traders. So I think you're going to see Bitcoin volatility remain elevated. You're going to see gaps. You're going to see lots of reasons why people are embracing this this kind of roller coaster ride. And I think, for a lot of the institutional investors, what they can really take some joy with is that a lot of the retail trader, they're just parked in. They're long-term. They're not actively looking at their Bitcoin. For them, they're thinking 100,000. They're thinking higher is when, they might want to start to take out some profit. So when you have a retail trader that is not as active and stubborn, the institutional world normally can run wild.
Well, Ed, we'll wrap it up there. There's a lot to take in there, and we'll continue to follow along with what's going on with Bitcoin, the crypto space, and even digital currencies with potential central banks around the world. We'll continue to follow what goes on in the wage and labor markets and what the Fed does to try to correct course as we move along in this bizarro environment where inflation is up and down, and then now so are the yields from bonds. So we'll check in again next week, Ed, but I appreciate your input. Thanks for being on the show today, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.